Support for podcasts of Medical Monday comes from Vassar Brothers Medical Center, the only hospital between Yonkers and Canada offering Makoplasty, the newest robotic surgical system for hip replacement and partial knee resurfacing. health-quest.org/VBMC ortho.
Hello, once again, and welcome back to the Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Alan Chartok. This month is Breast Cancer Awareness Month, and often a major part of treatment for breast cancer involves breast surgery. Joining us on this Medical Monday is Dr. Arvind Mahatme, a breast surgeon with Ellis Medicine in Schenectady, New York. He's head of the breast surgery program over there. Prior to joining Ellis Medicine, he worked at St. Peter's Breast Center in Albany, at the Fort Meade VA Hospital in South Dakota, and at the Centara Medical Group in Hampton, Virginia. He earned his medical degree at the University of South Florida College of Medicine, completed residencies at Henry Ford Health System in Detroit, and at the University of Nebraska Medical Center in Omaha. He's certified by the American Board of Surgery. Dr. Mahatma May specializes in surgical procedures like lumpectomies, mastectomies, and oncoplastic surgery, among others. Dr. Mahatme, welcome to Medical Monday.
Thank you very much for having me.
Well, you've had for a very young man, you've had a fairly extensive education, and it's amazing when you look at your bona fides and your background. So let me start by asking you whether or not I want to talk to you just for a second. We got some people on the line already. I want to go there, but. What I'm hearing more and more of now are people who decide that they're going to have prophylactic mastectomies once they find that they have either the BRCA gene or one of the others. Are you finding that to be an increasing number?
I think that is the case, especially in younger women. You know, you've seen in entertainment, Angelina Jolie followed that route. And, you know, if you have the BRCA gene, you're anywhere between 65 and 80% risk of developing a breast cancer or a breast malignancy during your lifetime. So, you know, younger women that have young kids and families opt to have a prophylactic mastectomy and a reconstruction so that they can put this behind them. So I've seen that quite a bit. And interestingly, you know, I've practiced both here and in Virginia, and I've noticed the number of patients here follow that route quite a bit.
So you were saying earlier that that you can, with some of the advances in surgery, you can now save the nipple and the plastic surgeons come right in and rebuild the breast. Is that right?
That is correct. That is not an option for every patient, but certainly in people that are BRCA positive or don't have a defined malignancy in the breast, what we call a nipple sparing mastectomy can be done. And then the plastic surgeon comes in and initiates the reconstructive process.
Amazing. It's all amazing to me. 1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. We'll go to Katrine in Niskayuna. Okay. Katrine, you're on.
Hi. I'm calling because my mother-in-law passed away a few years ago from breast cancer, and she had chemo for 5 days. And then she got constipated, and she didn't wake up the next day. She was constipated for 2 days, and I'm just wondering what she probably really died from.
You know, that's difficult to pinpoint. Did she have any signs of an infection when she was hospitalized? Did her white cell function, was it found to be very low?
I don't know any of that. They just...
You know, usually the main thing to be concerned about with chemotherapy is these are immunosuppressive agents. And so if one finds himself immunosuppressed to the point that your white cell counts are so low, there's a chance of an inopportune infection and succumbing to that.
I just know that it was a really bad, like it was a really strong cancer, a strong cocktail, we found out that it was an aggressive cancer.
Mm-hmm.
So would that be what caused the constipation and so bad? And
you know, usually you can have some GI side effects with chemotherapy. Usually they're more of the type that will cause you to have nausea or diarrhea. You know, in that instance, I can't say for certain that it was a direct cause of the constipation. Sometimes adjunct medications that patients take may cause the constipation. You know, potentially the bowel was inflamed secondary to the chemotherapy and caused a poor movement of the foods through it. That might have caused the constipation, but without having more of an evaluation of that, it's difficult to say.
So, Katrine, we're going to let you go. We thank you so much for the call. Interesting call. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
All right. Let's go to Dina in Monticello. Okay, Dina, you're on.
Hi.
Hi, Dina.
Oh, hi. I almost feel like it's a silly little question, but hopefully it's fast. About 9 months ago, I had a sonogram because the mammo was not accurate, that I had a very small, complicated cyst that the radiologist assured me was clearly benign. And 6 months later, they did another sonogram, and it hadn't changed. And I'm just wondering if this is something that, because it's in the breast, should I have it? It's at some point, if it doesn't change, should it be removed? Or if it doesn't change at all, can it just stay? Will eventually, could it go away? Or is it eventually going to become something or grow? Or might it just stay like that?
So cysts, you know, women very often will have cysts in their breast. They vary in spectrum from simple to complicated to complex. Certainly, very seldom are you going to see a cyst degenerate into a breast cancer, but the close follow-up that you know, you've had is certainly appropriate. If the cyst were to change in any fashion, then certainly doing a biopsy would be appropriate. If the cyst stays completely stable, it again underscores the likelihood that it's benign. You know, excising a cyst, maybe it was done 10, 20, 30 years ago. But this day and age, if it's something benign, unless it's increasing size or causing you symptoms, you don't necessarily want to have it excised. Whenever you have surgery, you'll develop scar within the breast tissue, and sometimes that scarring could potentially hide the development of early cancer in the future. So if it's a cyst that hasn't changed, it's not increasing in size, it's not causing you any symptoms, I would recommend you watch it.
And is there any way you can do a biopsy on a cyst?
You can. You can do a biopsy or an aspiration. So that's always an alternative
rather
than surgery.
What is an aspiration? I'm sorry.
An aspiration. So a simple cyst is made of fluid only.
Right.
So you just put a fine needle and aspirate the fluid out and the cyst collapses.
Uh-huh.
A complex or a complicated cyst may have a solid component to it, in which case you initially aspirate the fluid, and if there's any residual component, then you can biopsy that.
Can you tell from the fluid whether this is potentially cancerous?
Yeah, usually so. I mean, if it comes back and looks completely clear or green, mm-hmm. it's usually a benign cyst. Mm-hmm. If there's any blood to it, then you submit it for cytological analysis.
Gotcha.
It's in the position that the cyst is under the nipple, and that makes it more difficult. I don't know. Is that something that you know is any different?
Sometimes if a cyst or a lesion is really far posterior in the breast near the chest wall or really far anterior, it's difficult for them to do a biopsy on. They should still be able to aspirate it and get a sample that way.
Okay.
Thanks an awful lot. Appreciate it.
Thank you very much. Yeah. I appreciate it. Take care.
1-800-348-2551. We're going to take a short break. We'll be right back. Jennifer, stay there.
Support comes from Middletown Medical's Pediatric Express, walk-in urgent care for children in Chester with a pediatrician available weeknights until 9 p.m. MiddletownMedical.com. Berkshire Co-op Market, Great Barrington, offering organic and local groceries, working to build a healthy and sustainable community. Berkshire.coop. Ellis Medicine, providing primary care for the Capital Region with offices in Ballston Spa, Clifton Park, Glenville, Latham, Malta, and Schenectady. EllisMedicine.org. And New England Falconry, Hadley, Massachusetts, offering introductory, extended, and group hands-on sessions, as well as hunts through field and forest with a trained hawk. NewEnglandFalconry.com.
And we are back with Dr. Arvin Mahatme, a breast surgeon with Ellis Medicine in Schenectady, New York. And let's go to the next call. There are lots of free phones right now. If you want to get in, do it, because by the end of the show, you won't get near it. Okay, so it's Jennifer from Cooperstown. It's 1-800-348-2551. All right, Jennifer, you're on.
Hi, doctor. I am BRCA 2. I found out 2 years ago I had a bilateral mastectomy. I'm 50. And it went fine, and it was a very quick and easy decision for me, even though I did a lot of research. So with that said, do you feel there's a lot of different opinions on it? Do you feel mammograms are still needed after the bilateral mastectomy with a woman who's never had cancer and did it prophylactically?
I guess the best answer would be it really depends on the mastectomy. You know, I make it a point when I perform my mastectomies to really remove as much of as close to all the breast tissue as possible. I have seen some mastectomies where residual breast tissue has remained, you know, in which instance doing a mammogram may make sense. But if all the breast tissue has been removed, then really the follow-up should be clinical with clinical examinations, looking at the skin and looking at the underlying musculature. If someone has a bilateral mastectomy and subsequently had reconstruction, then with implants, then in that instance, you would do at least every 3 years an MRI evaluation, and that's mostly for evaluation of the implant integrity. There is some question that if you have autologous tissue transposed like a tram flap, that tissue can develop some calcifications, and that instance doing some imaging might be appropriate. But for a straightforward mastectomy, I usually don't recommend mammograms.
Okay, great. And I want to thank you for all you do, because we certainly appreciate it.
Indeed. Thank you so much, Jennifer.
Take care.
1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. Your chances of getting in right now, if you call right this second, are 100%. 1-800-348-2551. Doctor, have you ever done surgery on a male?
I have.
For a breast tumor?
I have. You know, the incidence is approximately 1%, but over the past year and a half, I've had two males with breast cancer for which we've done a mastectomy.
And what is a predictor of a male getting breast cancer? Is it possible that they have the same genetic mutations, or what is it?
Yes, that is a possibility. You can again, the incidence is much lower, but you can have BRCA positivity and develop a breast malignancy. The patients that we've had were just sporadic malignancies. You know, in that instance, you certainly still want to pursue and make sure that there is not a genetic subcomponent to it.
Now, there are relationships between the various cancers, so that somebody with a BRCA gene is more likely to have ovarian cancer too, or am I wrong about that?
That is correct. BRCA positivity confers you both the risk of breast and ovarian cancer. Ovarian cancer probably somewhere around 45% to 60%.
Mm-hmm. But is your training also in that surgery, or is it confined to breast?
No. My practice is solely breast-associated.
Mm-hmm. And what's it like? I mean, what's it like when a patient comes into the office and you take a look? And have they almost always found it themselves, or how is it done on film? How do people identify that they have?
I would say that probably about 85% to 90% of my patients have had the malignancy defined through imaging. You know, interestingly enough, to underscore the importance of both imaging and breast examination. I've had a few patients this past year who had a mammogram which was completely normal, and yet they come to the office and there's a 3-4 centimeter mass there.
How could that be?
Well, some malignancies are not picked up by the mammogram. A mammogram is not 100% sensitive or effective. So that's why in that instance, a clinical exam, a breast self-exam, is extremely important.
And what do you look for when you do a breast self-exam?
Usually you want to look at certainly any palpable areas that are nodular or harder.
What does palpable mean?
Something that you can feel.
Okay.
That is harder or more nodular than the rest of the breast. You want to look at any changes in the skin, like whether it's kind of sucked in or dimpled. You want to look at the nipple to see if there are any changes in the nipple. You want to see if there are any, there's any evidence of nipple inversion. You want to see if there is any bloody drainage from the nipple. All those are findings to look out for.
Okay. Let's go to Lynn. Okay. Lynn in Shelburne. Okay. Lynn, you're on.
Thanks, Alan. I think I missed a moment. Was that about breast implants?
No.
Okay. I have breast implants, and I got them when I was almost 40 years ago. And they're silicone. And I'm wondering what the chances are that, you know, they could be. I get my MRIs, I check every year, and they see some leak somewhere, but no big deal. And I'm just wondering what the chances are that I might get breast cancer when my breasts were so small that I'm not even sure I can feel a lump. I mean, dimpling and stuff, would that be an indication, or?
I'm sorry, we missed that one word. Something instead
dimpling.
Of...
Dimpling.
Dimpling.
Dimpling can be an indication. However, I've seen a number of folks with breast implants where the dimpling is actually associated with the surface of the implant. So dimpling, it's really more like if you have a hard mass and it pulls that breast tissue, that skin in, and it's not even movable. That usually is a sign of fairly advanced local disease. In terms of breast implants, there was, you know, silicone breast implants. There was a question in the 80s, 90s as to whether it was a potential cause for further disease in women. And studies have been performed and have negated that. So I wouldn't necessarily equate even a small leak with an increased risk of breast cancer. Certainly, it can cause some additional scarring or inflammatory reaction within the breast tissue. So in that instance, if there is enough of a leak or defect in that implant, a consideration should be to exchange it.
Yes, when I did get a mammogram, this last time, it's very, very firm. You know, usually they can pull the tissue over and do the mammogram, mm-hmm. and it was supposed to be under the muscle, and I'm not sure what they're talking about there. It's very firm. It's always been very firm. Can they see it all?
Yeah, I mean, they should be able to still do a mammogram and do an implant-displaced mammogram. Additionally, if there is increased density or if there's difficulty, the other alternative is, number one, to do an ultrasound and an MRI, as you had mentioned.
Okay, so I sort of missed this.
Thank you.
I wanted to ask you a question. Hold on 1 second, Lynn.
Oh.
Let me ask you this, doctor. Is there any indication that getting an implant could cause cancer?
Nothing that I've read that's proven that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, Lynn, thank you very much for your call.
Thanks,
Alan. Yeah.
Bye.
1-800-348-2551. Chances are excellent of getting in right now. So the question of whether or not to have a smaller operation or a total mastectomy, what's the deal?
You know, there have been multi-institutional long-term studies that have shown that if you've got a what we call a T1 or a T2 malignancy, meaning less than 2 centimeters or less than 5 centimeters in size, with someone that has adequate breast volume, a lumpectomy with radiation really causes similar overall prognostic results. Mm. You know, the caveat is that if you have a lumpectomy with good clear margins, you need to then follow that up with standard radiation. Just doing the lumpectomy puts you at maybe a close to 30 to 35% risk of recurrence at 5 years. A mastectomy, conversely, puts you at maybe a 2% risk. But if you do the lumpectomy with radiation, then you're at an equivalent number to a mastectomy, maybe at about 3% or so. Mm. So in patients that have adequate breast volume and a small lesion, breast conservation is most certainly the way to go.
What's the number one reason your patients tell you that they don't want their breast removed?
That they don't want the breast removed? I think a sense of self, you know, personal appearance and feeling like a woman.
Let us go to Catherine in Salisbury, Connecticut. Okay. Catherine, you're on.
Yes. Hello, and thank you for taking the call. Sure. I wonder, doctor, if you could comment on dense breast tissue.
Certainly. Dense breast tissue, the way I present it to my patients is if you take an area the size of a quarter, dense breast tissue means that in that same area, someone that has dense breast tissue has many more cells than in someone that doesn't. This, on a mammogram, appears as a whited out area. And so, as of last year, the recommendation has been made that women that have a certain category of breast density, the addition of an ultrasound is recommended to better look at the breast. Breast density is characterized as 1, 2, 3, or 4, 1 being 0 to 25% dense, 2 being 25 to 50, 3 being 51 to 75, and 4 being greater than 75. Women that have category 3 or 4 dense breast are at an increased risk of breast cancer, because of the significant amount of additional cells within per space, and second, because mammograms are more difficult to read. So in those instances, the addition of sonography is beneficial in diagnosing potential malignancies.
Hmm. I myself am a breast cancer survivor. My cancer was 12 years ago, and it was a small tumor. I had 6 months of chemo, radiation, and then 5 years of Arimidex. On my last mammogram, and of course I annually have a mammogram, I was told, and I do have dense tissue. The original tumor, I actually found myself. I actually saw it. I was told in my last mammogram that my tissue is no longer as dense. I'm 66 years old, I'm small, I'm thin, and that I have more fatty tissue. I just question that. This is a little confusing to me.
Actually, that's normal progression. Most women have really dense breast tissue in their 20s, 30s, basically in the premenopausal stage. As you hit menopause and beyond, the ligamentous and densest breast tissue, which is under the which is responsive to endogenous hormones, kind of become less prominent, and the breast becomes basically fatty replaced. And that's mostly secondary to the fact that all the premenopausal hormonal input is not there anymore. So that's very normal.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much.
And thank you, Catherine. Okay. So now we'll go to Connie in Hartwick, New York, but not before I say 1-800-348-2551. Connie, you're on.
Hello, doctor. I am a breast cancer survivor also. It's been 18 years, and I was 42. I'm 60 now. About 8 years ago, after I went through chemo and the radiation, I saw the cancer specialist once a year for about 10 years. And then I was told I didn't need to see a cancer specialist anymore. And I always felt a little uncomfortable about that, but is that normal procedure?
You know, I think being a survivor for that many years, I think, is great. You know, initially, after your diagnosis, people will see you every 3 to 6 months, and then they'll maybe see you every 6 months, and then every year. I think it depends a little bit on individual practice. I still see my patients every year and have them, you know, following a mammogram. So I value that a bit more. I still think that even if you're not seeing your oncologist anymore, you should still see your primary care doctor or your gynecologist and have someone do a clinical exam along with you doing breast self exams.
Okay, thank you. Also, after my treatments, I was told to be put on, I was put on tamoxifen for 5 years, and I was so tired and sick. Mostly I thought of the tamoxifen, and I also got depressed because of the tamoxifen. And, well, I mean, I guess that's a side effect. And so then they thought I should go on Paxil, which I didn't want to go on antidepressant. So I just, I read a little bit more about tamoxifen, and it said that it only reduced the chance of a reoccurrence by 5%, yet it did increase chances of ovarian cancer and blood clots and depression. So I just decided not to take anything, and I felt much better all around. Is that typical, or should I have kept on? Like I was on it for 2 years.
So the literature says that you know, endocrine therapy like tamoxifen decreases your risk by 50%. Now, the 50% is relative. So if your risk was 10%, so it decreased it by 5. But then, yes, you have associated side effects, and you know, the job of your oncologist or your doctor is to kind of present you the risks versus the benefits, and you look at the percentages and you weigh them. You know, if the risk, the side effects, and so forth, you know, the way I look at it, if the risks and the side effects, so forth, are the percentage or the cumulative effect is greater than the benefit, then, you know, we've had patients stop it and certainly feel much better. So it's, you have to look at what the absolute benefit provided by it is and what the risk of side effects is. You know, I've had patients that have gone into a significant depression secondary to it and stopped it. And, you know, they valued that significantly more than the 5%. And to them, it made sense. So you have to see what you're most comfortable with. Yeah, but, okay. You know, sometimes it's just, you know, whether it's a depression or another side effect, sometimes you just can't tolerate it.
Yeah. Well, thank you very much.
Thanks, absolutely.
Sonny. Bye-bye. 1-800-348-2551. Marianne in Oneonta. Marianne, you're on.
Yes, good afternoon. Thank you for taking my call. 2 years ago, July, I had a lumpectomy, and since it was in situ, I did not have any additional chemotherapy or radiation. A prescription was recommended, and it was exemestane. I don't know if that was recommended because I also have chronic leukemia or necessarily why, but nonetheless, I began to note a marked change in my energy levels. I am a very active person. I do a lot of physical work outside in the yard and garden, et cetera, et cetera. And it got to the point where at the end of the day, so fatigued, I could hardly make it to bed. And so I'm wondering what your experience might be with exemestane.
You know, I've had some patients develop similar symptoms or develop fibromyalgia-type symptoms. You know, the process of initiating a course of anti-hormone therapy can cause, basically it's putting you at an advanced postmenopausal state. So in that instance, it can cause some of the symptoms that you mentioned. The question really is, comes down to how much is it affecting you? And, you know, as I mentioned before, you got to weigh the risks and the benefits. If it's causing you unable to really perform your daily duties or enjoy life, then my recommendation is that you visit back with your oncologist and see whether there are other alternatives that might suit you better.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Actually, my oncologist said, you know, try stopping it for a month and just seeing what the reaction is. And I have been off it now for about 2 weeks. And I have noticed something of an increase in terms of my energy levels. And the other thing that was bothering me was is that it seemed as if my short-term memory was being greatly encumbered. And so I can't say for a fact that that's been improved. Maybe that's just some other circumstance called aging.
Well, I've noticed that as well in certain patients. But, you know, if you've been on it off of it for 2 weeks, you know, you continue the trial for another 2 weeks. And if you've noticed significant improvement, really the thought would be then to find something to see whether they have other alternatives that you that might be better suited for you.
And I'm rather wondering if one of my alternatives is not to take anything, in the sense that I am 75. I was told the chance of having a recurrence of breast cancer was like 10%. And I'm weighing my odds, given the fact that I have chronic leukemia. Well, so should I just enjoy a good, healthy life at this point and call it a day?
And, you know, I've had patients do that. So you have to look at what other health problems you have. You know, you have to look at the type of cancer you had and so forth. And it might be that after weighing all the pros and cons, the answer might be for you to stop. But I think the best way to go about it is to first visit with your oncologist and voice your concerns. And if it's, you know, after reviewing everything that makes sense, then that is right for you.
Marianne, I'm so sorry. We have to take a break now. Thank you for calling. Appreciate it very much.
Okay. Bye. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Okay. We'll take a break. We'll be right back.
Support comes from Nathan LaPower Hospital, Gloversville, New York, less than 50 minutes from Albany, offering minimally invasive procedures for back pain with Dr. Ja'an Shen, NLH.org. Stewart Shops, we are closer to you, with groceries and food to go. Vision Excel Eye Care, Lake Katrine, New York, providing eye exams, eye care, dry eye therapy, and more. Where eyewear is an art, Facebook or visionexceleyecare.com. And Albany Vegan Network, presenting Albany Veg Fest with cooking demos, food, vendors, speakers, and more. Open to the public Saturday, November 15th, 10 a.m. to 5 p.m., Polish Community Center, Albany, albanyvegfest.org.
Okay, it's Medical Monday. We're talking breast cancer. It's Breast Cancer Awareness Month, I believe, right now. And I'll ask the doctor about that in a moment. But let's go to Danielle in Troy. Okay, Danielle, you're on. You're on, Danielle.
Hi, thanks so much for taking my call. I'm calling because I'm 29. I'll be 30 next year. And I have a mother who has survived breast cancer twice. And she tested negative for the BRCA 1 and 2 mutation years ago. And I found out recently that my father's sister, my aunt, tested positive for the mutation. She also had breast cancer a number of years ago and recently was diagnosed with ovarian cancer. And I'm very curious about my risk, given the fact that I will soon be turning 30, and even though my mother tested negative, my dad's sister tested positive. So I'm curious about your thoughts on that.
Okay. I think, you know, with having family members, you know, a first-degree relative with breast cancer and a second-degree relative with breast and ovarian cancer certainly puts you at a slightly higher risk than the average population. Now, just because your aunt was BRCA positive doesn't necessarily mean that your father is. Certainly, if he was BRCA positive, it would put you at a significantly higher risk. But with the possibility of him being negative, that gene would not be translated to you, which case, you know, I would put you at a moderate risk simply because you have a family history of breast cancer and ovarian carcinoma, but not as high of a risk as someone that would be BRCA positive.
Okay, so would you recommend, I mean, is it common for men to be tested for the mutation as well?
Common for men to have? Yes.
For men to be tested, because I had mentioned it to my father, and he thought it was a bit wild. He was like, I don't think I need to be tested for that. And I was like, well, you have half of your genetic makeup, so I think you should.
Correct. I mean, it is the likelihood or the incidence of male breast malignancies is extremely low, but if his sister was BRCA positive, it had to come down from one of his parents, and so he is at risk. So the best way for you to know where you are would be for him to consider testing.
Right. Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Absolutely.
Thanks a lot, Danielle.
Okay. Thanks.
1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. So, Doc, I wonder, you talked before about why some women don't like to have prophylactic surgery, and it has to do often with self-image and the rest. Here we are in Breast Cancer Week. You know, most of us men that I know would do anything to keep their mates alive. Do men ever get involved in the counseling that you do?
I mean, I recommend and welcome that, you know, women bring their spouses, children, any family members. I think it's extremely important to have that support system. And for the majority, I mean, the husbands have been there from day one and through the treatments and thereafter. So, they do. They serve as a good support system.
And is it what's said? I mean, I'm fascinated by this. What is said in that room when you're there? Obviously, there are HIPAA laws, and you're not going to tell me about individuals. But do the husbands sort of have to lay it on the line that the woman's health is far more important than having breasts, for example?
Yeah. I mean, honestly, ultimately, they want their wife alive more than anything else. Oftentimes, you know, as I mentioned to the patients, they support their wives and really support their decision. If they choose to have a mastectomy, they support it. If they choose to have breast conservation, they support it. They really, the majority of the time, say, it's your decision and I'm there, whatever you choose.
And what does that mean, breast conservation?
So breast conservation entails the counterpart to a mastectomy being a lumpectomy, where you just take the tumor and a rim of healthy tissue around it.
Gotcha. Let's go to Susie in Lenox, Massachusetts. Okay, Susie, you're on.
Yes, I have been tested. I am carrying the BRCA2. I had my ovaries removed, and my mother had ovarian cancer. They caught it early. She survived. I was wondering, since I had my ovaries removed, would it put me even at higher risk for breast cancer? Would the BRCA2 then not be able to hit the ovaries, so it would go right for the breast?
No, actually, having a BRCA gene and puts you, as you mentioned, at risk for breast and ovarian cancer. But in women that don't have a bilateral mastectomy, removing their ovaries not only significantly decreases the risk of ovarian cancer, but also actually decreases your risk of breast cancer. You know, oftentimes a lot of the malignancies are under hormonal stimulation, and so removing that stimulation from the ovaries decreases your risk of breast cancer as well.
Oh, that's fascinating. That's good news.
Thanks, Susie. Bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. And now from Susie to Susan in Amherst. Okay, Susan, you're on.
Hi.
Hey.
I'm calling because my sister has just gotten a diagnosis of triple-negative cancer throughout her bones, significantly through her back and in her skull, not her brain, but in her skull. two members of her oncology team have given two different estimates of timeline. One has said 2 to 5 years, the other has said 1 to 3 years. She has decided to choose quality of life and Zometa for pain management, but no more chemotherapy. This is something that has migrated from breast cancer 9 years ago. As her family, we're trying to think about next steps and best guesses on timeline. Is there any way we can find a way to get a better sense of what we have ahead of us?
You know, it's sometimes difficult because every patient is different. In some instances, under a course of medication, it may stay stable and unchanged for a period of time. I think part of it may be dependent on what the pathological features of the malignancy are, its grade, its level of aggressiveness, and so forth. If she's got bone-only disease, then, you know, follow the course that's been prescribed to her and maybe doing a bone scan evaluation at certain periods might be able to define what the level of progression or stability is. And that might give you a little bit of a better idea in terms of what her prognosis is. So the main thing in this instance would be to do follow-up imaging to make sure that the disease remains stagnant.
That's excellent advice. I thank you very much for your help.
Thank you, Susan.
Bye now.
And we go to Laura in... let's see. That would be Laura in Westchester. Okay, Laura, you're on.
Hi, my question is about 3D mammography. Can you explain what the pros and cons are for someone with dense breasts?
Well, the pros are that it takes many more serial pictures, and so the radiologist is able to look at the breast tissue in a different conformational fashion. Basically, they'll be able to look at little areas that otherwise wouldn't have been picked up on a 2D mammogram. So in someone that has dense breast, the additional serial pictures gives the radiologist a better chance to pick up something that was small that might not have been seen on the 2D mammogram. The main con of it is that it is more radiation than a 2D mammogram. So one has to factor that in. If you compare the two, though, let's say you have a 2D mammogram that shows you you have dense breast and there's a questionable finding. Then you have to come back and do additional views. And then maybe you'll have to come back in 6 months to do additional views. So that all that might be obviated by you having a 3D mammogram, which on the front end may have a little bit more radiation, but you may not need to come back and then come back in 6 months and so forth. So it's certainly in someone that has dense breast may improve the ability to pick up something and may limit the need for additional pictures and then 6 month pictures and so forth.
Thank you.
Thanks. All right. That was a good question. And let's go to Susan in Ulster Park. Susan, you're on.
Hi. My question is about breastfeeding. Mm-hmm. And the information that I read is that you can have a reduction in the risk of breast cancer. So I just wondered if any of that has led to any research.
Susan, you mean for the child or for the...
No, for the mother.
Okay, yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Is that fact? I don't know if it's a fact or what the risk. I read on that after a year, every year additional, there's a more benefit to protecting you from getting breast cancer. I don't really know more than that, but I just wondered if that information, you know, whatever it is that prevent, you know, that helps you not develop a cancer, is that somehow being researched or, you know, to benefit women?
For many years, we've looked at what possible factors can increase risk or decrease risk. And the main point is that if your breasts are under hormonal stimulation from your body for an extended period of time, your risk is thought to be increased. So it's said that women that have early menarche and then late menopause are under the influence of hormonal stimulation for a greater period of time, and so have a higher risk. Women that have later menarche and earlier menopause, conversely, at a lower risk. Women that bear children have a low risk, because again, that period of stimulation is affected. Women that breastfeed are at lower risk. So the studies have had to do with the impact of hormonal stimulation, and a lower time period under set stimulation has been thought to decrease your risk. So yes, breastfeeding decreases your risk along with the number of children that you bear.
What does that mean? Do you mean the more the better?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay. And that has to do with hormonal, could you say that again?
So the breast being under the influence of the hormones produced by your ovaries.
Oh, okay.
Thanks, Susan.
Well, thank you. That's interesting. Thank you.
Bye. 1-800-348-2551. Let's go to Tim in Gardner, New York. Hi, Tim. You're on.
Good afternoon, Alan. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I wanted to comment. My wife, who's perfectly wonderful health this year, right now, went through breast cancer and had double mastectomy and reconstruction. The hardest part of the whole thing, well, one of the hardest parts of the whole thing, was our insurance company. And I just wanted to share with the listeners, we went to an in-network doctor in Kingston, New York, who's wonderful, and a woman, and she partners with another doctor, you know, who does the reconstruction, and we wanted a particular flap therapy using autologous tissue rather than putting an implant. Our insurance company, MVP, would not allow us to use the doctor that we wanted, which there's a federal law which was passed under President Clinton, and there's a state law here in New York. And we actually had to go to the Attorney General of New York and the New York State Department of Financial Services to get MVP Healthcare to just follow the law and provide the breast surgery that my wife was entitled to under the law. And I just wanted to share that with you.
Okay. Thank you very much for sharing it. Appreciate it.
Sure. And women need to advocate for themselves.
Indeed they do.
You know, against these health insurance companies.
Indeed they do. Thank you for that. Let's go to Cheryl in Connecticut. Cheryl, you're on.
Yes. Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to ask you, I have very dense breasts. I'm 56 years old, and I have had a biopsy, which was fine. But I've had I had my mammogram with an ultrasound. It was a 3D mammogram, and I had an ultrasound and a clinical exam. And now they're recommending that I have an MRI. I'm just wondering, is that overdoing it, or is that something that the next step that should be taking with someone with dense breasts?
You know, in certain instances, it is. You know, a 3 mammogram, if there is any possible question between the mammographic finding and if it's not corroborated by ultrasound or there's a debate, then basically the MRI is a tiebreaker. You know, women that have significantly dense breast and otherwise at least a 20% chance or risk of developing a breast malignancy are appropriate candidates for MRI. And so if you've had a 3D mammogram and an ultrasound and there's still a question as to a possible finding, the MRI can sometimes have it go one way or the other.
Mm-hmm. Okay, great.
Thanks, Cheryl.
Thank you.
I'm afraid, ladies and gentlemen, that some people waited a little long to get on, but we're now out of time, and I appreciate so much everybody who's called in. Again, I want to thank Cheryl and Barbara for doing their thing. Next time, we'll try to get you. I want to thank Dr. Arvind Mahatme for joining us today. Support for Medical Monday comes from Toprosin, creams designed to heal muscle aches, back, neck, and shoulder pain, injuries, carpal tunnel, and more. Toprosin.com. Thanks to our engineer, Zach Malloy. Thanks to Colleen O'Connell for answering the phones. Our producer's Jessica Blaustein-Marshall. I'm Alan Chartok. Thanks again for joining us on the Vox Pop. And remember, the conversation continues online at wmc.org/voxpop. And stay tuned for a news update. Dr. Mahatme, I want to thank you for spending all this quality time with us. Appreciate it very much.
Thank you very much.